Blog Talk Radio.
All right. It is Thursday night, folks. Thursday night, 10 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. Every night we broadcast for 30 minutes and we talk about issues that are relevant to you and hopefully provide some insight and some information about something that's relevant, something that matters. And every Thursday night, for the next several months anyway, we're going to be visited by Dr. David Owalalu. And his background, just to give you a brief background, he is a blogger, author, global affairs analyst, and professor. It's a great combination of skill sets. And he's also a former international security analyst in Washington, D.C., and he is a current adjunct professor of government at McLennan Community College here in Waco. So he does have a background and lots of experience. I just want to start out, already noticed the switchboards are lit up tonight. Looks like, you know, if you want to listen in, that's great. We're glad to have you listening in. It sounds really good when you call in. But this episode, we're not going to have any time for callers, I hate to say. This is going to be jam-packed. The topic is our American education system. This is the Duke Machado Show. I am Duke Machado. You can find me on Facebook, the Duke Machado Show, and or on Twitter at Duke Machado 1. So now that we get all that out of the way, David, welcome to the program again.
Glad to be here, Duke.
Well, you're definitely lighting up the phone lines. People want to try to get in and talk, but unfortunately we don't have time. But the topic is a great topic. Education, where are we with this? To me, it seems like, and I wrote about this, you know, we all talk about economy, we all talk about immigration, terrorism, and all these major issues, and education seems like it's kind of pushed under the rug or swept or kicked the can down the road, so to speak. Tell me what your thoughts are. What do you see going on as an educator? I know we're going to get into a discussion, but basically I'm just going to turn it over to you.
Okay. Well, first of all, I am delighted to be back here on your show. It's always an exciting time for me to sort of do my homework, prepare whatever we need to talk about, and so I'm very, very excited to be here. Let me start off first by quoting you on what you had on your introduction regarding the show for tonight. When you stated, and I quote, "Education is the true battleground for the future of the United States of America." And I could not agree more with you, because without education, our country would not move forward. I know it can be shocking to hear that as a country that is considered the most powerful and highly developed nation in the world is producing below average students. That is unacceptable. And even certain research and polls that have been conducted, and for example, I recall one study that was done by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. That was done, I believe, in 2009 or 10, something like that. It showed that the U.S. coming in 14th internationally in reading, 17th in science, and a disappointing 25th in math. That is unacceptable. So the bottom line to me is there are major flaws that has to be addressed head-on to figure out to why we are not performing at the level we need to be. But there are underlying issues. Yeah, go ahead.
Where does it start? I mean, does it start all the way in kindergarten, pre-K, or every time you talk to teachers, they say, well, you need to catch them by sixth grade. Some of them say, well, you need to catch them by fourth grade or it's too late. Where do you see that we're losing everyone?
Well, I would have to agree that it started at an early age. It's because, take for example, the best example I can notice, and I am a multilingual. I speak four languages, okay? Here in the U.S., we don't start four languages till students get to high school. In Europe, or where I came from, you start languages, four languages early on. That's one of the hindrances to why we're not able to understand other cultures, because we're not getting early on to learn about what other countries are doing, to learn the language, to learn the culture, to be exposed to that at an early age. And this is just one example for that. Say, for example, as a former ambassador, her name is Karen Kornblau. She used to be the former U.S. ambassador to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. And I couldn't agree with more with her assertion regarding the example she provided, the illustrations she provided, about two type of schools, one of them from China and one of them from Finland. And the reason she stated these two examples is because schools in China, for example, they undergo radical reform at early age. Finland, on the other hand, values education and scores at the top in science. Why? Because the kids in these schools don't excel because they are good at memorization, for example. Rather, the measurements of how well students apply knowledge and skills acquired in the classroom to problems they have never faced before. And this is exactly the kind of skills needed for innovation and growth. If we are, for example, in my classroom, if you are coming to as a student to my classroom, and I'm going to present slides to you, read them to you, then what's the point? If we can go behind the slides, if we can talk beyond the words expressed on the slide, if I can engage you in an intellectual conversation, if I don't get out that creativity out of you, then education is not going to move forward. It is not about just what's written in a book and what's printed on the slides. It is about how you're going to express your ideas intellectually. And that's what we're missing
in the
classroom.
The way I see it, it's kind of an outsider. I'm not a professional educator, but just someone on the outside looking in. It seems like, for some reason, our schools are continuing to pass students who technically have not acquired certain skills. And they pass these students and keep passing them. And you know, maybe they're challenged because they don't know English well. Maybe they're they have broken homes and don't have any time to do their homework. I don't know, but it seems to me like whatever the reason is, they're still advanced, and they graduate, and they hit the real world, and they can't get a job because they can't do basic math. But why are we passing people like this?
Well, it's because we tend to have the tendency of measuring only statistics. We miss the human aspects of education. And also, one of the other problems that now I am inside, per se, within the education system, I'm noticing that the decisions are made by policymakers, and policymakers are not educators. They don't have that understanding of how education operates. Those are politicians. They have to think in different terms. Throwing money at the problem is not the solution. Take, for example, the No Child Left Behind policy, which I believe did not produce what was intended for, despite spending billions of dollars on a program that it didn't address the fundamentals, because the individuals who are deciding on those are politicians, not educators. And we will get into the idea of whether the government needs to be involved in education or not. But that's where I see part of the problem. And the issue of when you have a student, I have students in my classroom that they are not native speakers. And guess what? They perform well because they have the perseverance, the determination, and the willingness to learn. They are willing to do and put the hard effort on their part to succeed. And I do recognize that in them, and I praise them for it.
Well, and you're talking about the ones that get to college. All those who never make it that far and drop out, did our system fail those people, or were those people just not willing to do what's necessary to pass classes? I don't know. I look at this. I think we're spoiled. We're feeding everybody morning, noon, and night. During the summer, while they're at during this school session, I'm talking about public schools. Like you said, we keep throwing money. We keep throwing money, but isn't all of the funding part of the problem? The way schools are funded, isn't that part of the problem?
It is indeed. It is indeed. When you have, for example, a school district that decides to cram a classroom with 30 to 35 students for a teacher to take care of, and yet at the same time you are not even taking care of that instructor. Not only financially, but logistically. But there are other ways of demonstrating appreciation for those instructors. And why? Because we think in terms of just throw the money at the problem, it will be solved. The district needs more money, give them more money. But again, we are not addressing the fundamentals. The students that are not supposed to be in classroom, they shouldn't be sitting in classroom. After you do all the necessary, you provide all the necessary assistance to them, but if you realize they are not school materials, they might be great at learning some vocation. They can attend trade school. The state can think in terms of, do we want everybody to become a doctor? No. You're going to need some welders. You're going to need some carpenters. You're going to need some electricians. And maybe some students are good at that. Maybe they are not made for sitting in classroom and observe concepts that they are intellectually challenging a little bit. But they might be good with their hands. So why are we throwing the money at making the classroom bigger with students who do not want to be there? They don't belong there. And we are not willing to make the tough decisions on that.
Well, it's
So.
because to me, I look at that, and that kind of goes back to the thinking that everyone gets a recognition award. You used to just have a trophy for first place. Now everyone needs to get recognized, and we don't want to make people feel bad for failing. And so instead, we sugarcoat it, and we hurt them in the long run.
Exactly. And that's part of the problem because we sugarcoat things. Because education is not a right, it's a privilege. You have no right to be in college, says who? It's privilege. You have to earn that privilege to be there. You have to be at the level where you need to be to think. I mean, we don't think critically. And I emphasize this on my students a lot at MCC. And they are responding to it. And here is why. I'm going to give you an example. Last semester, I started the federal government class at MCC. And the students were, because I instilled discipline from day one, you do not show up in my class late, period. That means if you couldn't show up on time, then that means that class doesn't mean anything to you. So you're not going to be walking into my class 15 minutes late. You need to be there on time. You need to be disciplined. You need to focus. And what I noticed is, by the end of the semester, I'll have students asking me questions that I am surprised, because to me it's a good sign. They're asking questions that matter. For example, one of them last semester asked me, said, Dr. O, they called me Dr. O because I couldn't pronounce my last name. They said, Dr. O, are we still going to be borrowing money from China? And when you have a 19 or 18 or 20, whatever that age is, asking questions like that, then you start to think in terms of, well, at least that's a good sign. Somebody's thinking critically. We lack in that critical thinking because we want everything to be prepared for us. Even the news is prepackaged for us. We're not devoting time to think to reach our own conclusions. So to go back to your point, yes, we want to sugarcoat everything because we worry more about scores, tests, and all that stuff rather than learning. Learning. That's what we're missing. And also the other issue of discipline. There are no disciplines in public schools. Why do I have to cater to somebody who's not willing to demonstrate respect and discipline for the learning environment? If you are not willing to...
They used to take kids out of class and put them in other buildings who were causing problems or who were discipline issues. But today, well, these teachers don't have any options. They were immediately. It reminds me of how the police are afraid to police because they're afraid to be sued. Teachers are afraid to discipline because they're afraid to be sued.
Yeah. And then the question becomes is, where do you trace the problem to? I would have to say, maybe there's too much intervention from the federal government. Maybe the government needs to step aside, let the states decide for how they want to approach their own system. Let the educators become creative, because it is the problem. Educators are afraid to come up with ideas because they said the system won't allow it. And once you start limiting that creativity, the students do not get the true learning experience from the classroom. I'm a believer of this online education and so forth, but there is a human element to it. You need that interaction. You need that discipline. You need to see the facial expressions of your students when they're in front of you as you challenge them on an intellectual level. You need to have that conversation, an honest one, in classroom, because that's what creates ideas. That's what creates that intellectual environment where we all can learn from each other, rather than having a professor or an instructor, or whatever you want to call him, show up in class and it's like, okay, well, you guys, here is the slides, here's this and that, and that's about it. So that interaction, it's almost like start to perish, because we're not willing to think hard. We're not willing to see where the issues are when it comes down to how do you want your learning environment inside your classrooms.
Well, it seems like it should be about the basics. It's like we're trying to get fancy and reinvent the wheel and forgetting how to do the basic principles of mathematics and science. We're trying to invent new ways to learn and forgetting the traditional tactics. My wife reads Little House on the Prairie series to my daughter, and in those books they talk about the classroom experience, and I would venture to say that a person in a rural Midwest school in the 1800s gets a better education than public school students today.
It's because in terms of, we are thinking in terms of we have a problem. Okay, let's throw money at it. It's this concept of money will solve everything. It's a puzzle to me. I couldn't fathom how policymakers think in these terms of just through the monetary education and it will be solved. It will not. It will not. Look at other countries moving far ahead, or even within our own society here. If you look at, for example, the Asian Americans, why Asian American students are exceeding far than Native Americans who were born here, white Americans, or any other ethnicity. It's because it's the environment at home. The parents instill that kind of a drive. I don't want you to be average. I want you to be the best. I don't want you
you know, we kind of call that American exceptionalism. And, and there's certain liberal politicians that think that when you start to say that we need to be the first, we need to be in the first place, then we're trying to say we're better than everybody else, and we're not better than everybody else. That's what they want us to think now. We used to think the opposite. It's funny how a certain culture is changing the mindset of what's acceptable now and what should be acceptable. But, you know, you go back and you start telling people that they need to raise their expectations, What do you think? What do you think they're going to tell you?
Yeah, they're not going to like that. They kind of like, well, what are you talking about? But at the same time, to me, that's what I see part of the issues. In my house here, I mean, when I talk to my kids, whatever, I say, hey, listen, here is where the standards are. I expect you to be here because A, B, and C have to be done certain ways for you to achieve that level. I set the parameters. I set the standards. I provide the platform for that. I provide the resources for that success to be achieved. Then I said, the rest, it's up to you. I can't do it for you. I can only provide the resources for you. Provide a good environment, stable environment. I'll assist with the assignments. I'll assist with the homework. But I will not do it for you because the learning process has to come from you. And I see the results to that. My youngest one, 8 years old, his grades are 95 above. And I explain it even now. And I said, listen, Michael, this is not about me. This is not for me. This is for you down the road. You want to exceed. You want to succeed. You're going to have to put the efforts now. And it only gets complicated with education, but that's how you grow intellectually. If you don't have a solid foundation now, things will crumble on you down the road. Same concept with our education. It's what we put into it now for the future generations. But obviously, we are not doing it the right way. We are not doing it the right way. And take, for example, just the National Center for Education Statistics recently completed a study, more recently, on the literacy of American adults in the 21st century. And you know what they found? Which was surprising to me, that the United States, and I quote here, the United States has an educated population. Although the attainment is lower and the dropout rate in the U.S. is the highest among developed nations.
Oh, yeah, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
It is embarrassing. I mean, if you couldn't have the frustration because you care. You know, I challenge my students. I said, if I am a little bit strict with you in classroom because I care, because I want you to succeed, because you are the next generation, you are the next leaders of this country. If I don't toughen up on you now, I'm not doing my job the way it's supposed to be. And this is why when you think of, you don't need to push the kids too much. That's nonsense. That is nonsense. You don't build that determination in them now, that willingness, that perseverance. Then Exactly.
Yeah, they'll be destined to an average or sub-average life for the rest of their lives. So I want to do something here real quick.
Yeah,
well, that's right. Everyone just average.
Well,
that's socialism. That's what I think some people want for this country. But hey, real quick, David, I know I said we wouldn't, but I think we might have a minute. We've had a caller on hold for 23 minutes. Can we get him on for just 1 minute?
Certainly.
Let's bring him on. Caller 8203, why don't you tell us your name and where you're from?
Hello, this is Tony, and I'm from Waco.
Tony Abad, awesome. You tuned in.
Yes.
What do you think of what David is saying and talking about?
Well, I'm intrigued by it. I agree with both of y'all, and I like all the information that he has and his hands-on experience teaching at MCC, of course. I'm proud of that, and bringing his vast experience to McLaren Community College, I think that's awesome.
I think it's a good point.
I did have a quick question as far as how do the students take the way you teach? Is it something new to them as far as the way you handle your teaching, not only that, but also the way you challenge them to become better students?
Well, actually, Tony, literally, I do give positive feedback when the student conducts the professor evaluation at the end of the semester. And I tend to read all that because, to me, that's what I learned from. Where were my shortcomings? Where were my strengths? What do I need to improve on? And most of what I notice in the observation is that they like the method because it's different. And even during the semester, I will ask, like 3 weeks or 4 weeks after the semester starts, and I say, "But guys, I have a question for you." And, of course, well, everybody stares at me because they're wondering what it's going to be. And I said, "What do you like about my teaching method? Or do you want me to change anything? Or what would you prefer? Or what would you like?" Because I want them to engage. I want them to be part of the process. They said, "No, doctor, we like it the way because you're challenging us to think." And that's part of, to me, what learning environment is all about. If I can create, if I cannot get out that creative side in you, then I have failed in my mission. And how will I do that? Is by challenging you on what I'm lecturing on. As I always believe, I can read the slides, they can read the slides, but I have to look beyond what's behind the slides. The theories, the concepts, and that's what we're missing in our country here.
That's great. Well, yeah. Go ahead, Duke, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Tony.
Well, I was going to say that I think that it's great that they like your teaching, but at the same time, that brings questions to my mind as far as what are the other instructors teaching, what are their methods?
I would not be able to answer that one, Tony, because I don't know. Each professor has its own method. I bring something different to the table because of the experiences that I had before and my military lifestyle and all the travel and all that. So those are add a little bit more to that experience.
We are just laying the foundation on this education conversation. This is the first night. We're going to have David back every Thursday night for the next several weeks, and we can continue on this topic. And I know that we've got new topics coming up. He's going to be well versed and prepared to give some insight on our program every Thursday night. We're talking at least for the next 3 to 4 weeks, and then maybe we'll tap him out a little bit. He may want to take a break. It is kind of late, and I apologize for that, but that's how it is on Blog Talk Radio. I want you guys to please visit our show's Facebook page. That's going to be the Duke Machado Show, and follow me on Twitter at Duke Machado 1. We have to begin this dialogue. We have to start calling things as we see them. The battleground for the future of the United States is education. It's our system and how we resolve it. David, thank you for calling in tonight and visiting with us. I'll give you the last minute.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure, Duke. And as I said again and again, I will repeat it. I truly enjoy the show because it's unfiltered. This is where the true conversation is. As you said, we don't have to sugarcoat it. We have to face the problems head on. But at the same time, the first step to solving a problem is identify the root causes. And education is not an easy thing to deal with. We can't be solving it within a year or two or three. That's going to take some time. But at least we can start laying the foundation for that solution right now. And that, in education, is very important because the whole future of the country will depend on that.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for tuning in. My name is Duke Machado, and we are out of here.